A Simple Thing, written by Iridan, read by Marianas. Chapter 1. Wrong.
Ugh, said the Duros, piloting the battered freighter Dan had chartered off Narshada.
You're sure this is where you want to stop, Mando? Nothing much on Tatooine these days, not since old Jabba died.
Din said nothing. The shuttle rattled unhappily as it slid down through Tatooine's atmosphere. The vibration echoed through Din's Beskar and made his teeth ache. He ignored it and focused on the sea of sand growing in the viewport, pulling himself out of his cloudy thoughts with some effort. The Duros waited another few seconds for a response, then grunted.
Have it your way, he said, fiddling with the controls. He should have been used to Din's silence by now, anyway. The jump between Tatooine and Narshada was not short.
The freighter moaned again, heat shields flaring, and the shapeless sea of sand underneath the ship began to resolve itself from broad swaths of colors into rolling red dunes and high plateaus scored with cool, dark canyons, like the view through a scope coming into focus. Din had always liked Tatooine, despite what the rest of the galaxy said about it. Granted, the rest of the galaxy didn't have climate controls wired underneath their Beskar, but Din had liked Tatooine even before he'd earned a full Beskar Gam. Tatooine was an honest place. Wild, vicious, and packed its moons with criminals of every shape and size, but honest. After the places Din had been the last few cycles, he'd appreciate some honesty. At least on Tatooine, he could expect that someone always had a blaster aimed at his back. On the light cruiser, it was sometimes hard to tell. Kreese traded verbal barbs like a Deveronian traded punches. Din would prefer to trade punches with a Deveronian, actually. At least in a fistfight, Din could hit back. He could never seem to manage a conversation with Kreese. Talking to her usually just left Din off balance and half convinced Kreese would try to space him in his sleep. Din could never say the right thing around her, and she had a short temper. The Duros pilot continued to ramble as the freighter made its final approach. Round, snubby white buildings rose out of the sand like blunted bones. Din had wanted to charter straight to Mos Pelgo, which was both out of the way and deep in Tusken territory, safe behind the Sand People's fearsome reputation. But Mos Pelgo didn't have a spaceport, so once again Din watched as the grimy, crooked shape of Mos Eisley crawled its way out of Tatooine's dust, looking just a bit grimier and a little bit more crooked than it had a few months back. A pang that had nothing to do with the freighter rattling and bouncing around went through Din's chest, aching like a bruise. He pulled his mind away from it. The pilot didn't pick Pelly's bay, anyway. The Duros had no way of knowing that Din had been here before, would prefer a private bay and a private way out of the city. The Duros picked a public bay and settled down beside a battered Outrider-class shuttle and a G9 rigger that looked like it hadn't flown since the Clone Wars. Din sighed. He'd draw attention to himself anyway. Silver Beskar usually did.
Keep the change, Din said, climbing out of his seat before the shuttle's engines had stopped their groaning, tossing the Duros his payment.
Narshada hadn't had much by way of employment, not even for someone with Din's particular skill set, but Gideon's light cruiser had been well-stocked with everything from Imperial credits to calamari flan, so Din at least wouldn't need to work for a while. He'd stashed away enough credits to outfit himself with a ship, at least, and maybe even a bed in Mos Pelgo without any sand mites.
I won't need to work ever again if Kreese gets her way.
Bo-Katan wanted to rebuild Mandalore. She'd made it her quest. And there was little room in her idea of what Mandalore should be for a bounty hunter like Din. She wanted Din to be her sworn warrior, like Costco Reeves and Axe Woves. She wouldn't hear of anything else. The Darksaber, hidden underneath the folds of Din's cloak, was heavy on his hip. The pilot hadn't seen it, nor had anyone on Narshada. Din hadn't been careful enough in hiding it the first few times he'd ventured outside of the light cruiser, and even though the blade was black and hummed like struck Beskar, it was apparently recognizable the galaxy over as a Jedi weapon. Din had been jumped twice by bounty hunters who'd seen it on his hip and thought him a Jedi. He still had bruises from the second, a big Lasat who'd done his level best to put Din through a wall. His ribs had twinged and ached for days every time Din took a deep breath, but by now they'd healed enough to be irritating instead of grounding or useful. Din was more careful with the Darksaber now. He would have just left it behind on the light cruiser, but Koska had told him to keep it with him.
I don't want it, Din had told her for the 1,000th time since he'd picked the damn thing up off the floor to keep it away from Gideon. It's useless to me, just extra weight. The only close-quarters fighting Din had ever trained in had been staves and knives. The Beskar spear had adapted well to what Din remembered with a stave, but the darksaber wasn't the right size for either style. Din had no interest in holding onto the thing long enough to learn how to use it. He preferred the spear, and also having all his limbs attached to his body. He'd seen the darksaber cut through tempered durasteel without any effort. Din was fully armored, but even his armor had its joints and gaps. He didn't need to trip while trying to wave the darksaber around and cut through an elbow or a wrist. I don't care, Kasia had told him bluntly. You can't leave it here. It'll drive Bo mad, and it's yours by right anyway. So Din, tired of losing the same argument, had resentfully clipped the darksaber to his belt, hidden it under his cloak, and gone off to Tatooine. As long as he made it to safe ground without anyone seeing it, he ought to be all right. Din was sorely tempted to bury the blade in the sand and forget about it, but then Kreese would kill him, and Din had promised to help her in her quest, since she had helped him in his. That made them allies. Murder among allies was bad for morale. Still, it was tempting. Din let himself imagine it for a minute, the darksaber's hilt disappearing into the sands, out of mind and out of memory, then shook his head and made himself focus again. He had an appointment to make. Din stepped out into the open air, moving quickly, head up, searching for white helmets and black blasters. The Imperial remnants had heard about Gideon's defeat by now, but the last intel Kara had sent Din's way had said that the remnants were all fleeing the rims, retreating deeper and deeper into wild space, harried by the New Republic and its patchwork band of allies. Tatooine was wild enough to host any number of Din's enemies, but it had as little love for the Empire as most places. Din didn't see any stormtroopers or moths in faded greens. There was no Empire here, not anymore. No one else would bother tracking Din to Tatooine. The New Republic had forgotten about Tatooine entirely, and between Karga's grip on the Guild and the wider chaos in the rest of the galaxy, Din's enemies were thin enough on the ground. For now, anyway, he thought. Din was sure that he'd collect more sooner or later. Satisfied that he wasn't about to get jumped by a stormtrooper looking for a promotion, Din set those thoughts aside, too. Mos Pelgo was a desert away, and Din had no transport. He was better off renting a speeder and going straight to Jabba's palace. He could figure out how to get to Mos Pelgo later. The Dura spluttered a thanks behind Din as he left the freighter, shouting at his back, but Din didn't turn around. He had no intention of chartering a flight off Tatooine. When he left, he'd do it in his own ship. Vanth might have one for me, Din reasoned, shoving down another rib-deep pang. He had refused all of the shuttles on the light cruiser, missing the crest fiercely and hating the stark lines of Imperial Omicron-class hunter-killers, but sentiment wouldn't get Din very far. It was time to find another transport of his own. And if he doesn't, Fett will. Fett was the one who'd called Din to Tatooine. Fett and Fennec had stuck around for a little while after Gideon's defeat. Din determinedly thought of the events on the light cruiser only as Gideon's defeat and nothing else. Mostly, as far as Din could tell, to keep an eye on Din himself. Din didn't know what else the pair could have been doing. Din had spent most of Fett's time aboard the light cruiser, unconscious and in Bacta, which had been a new and embarrassing experience. Apparently, as soon as the Jedi had closed the bridge doors and vanished from view, taking the kid with him, Din had folded up like a piece of wet flimsy and crumpled senselessly to the floor. He'd woken up 3 days later, suspended in Bacta, staring at an irritated med droid, his Beskar gum in a tidy pile in the corner of the medbay. Fett had stuck around long enough for Din to come out of Bacta, and later, surgery, once the med droid had determined that the bones in Din's right arm were too brittle from a lifetime of breaks to ever heal properly and needed plates screwed in, and started wobbling around the cruiser like a baby nerf figuring out his legs for the first time. Then he'd slapped Din across the shoulder, traded a few incomprehensible barbed comments with Kreese, grabbed Fennec, and hit the black. Din hadn't heard from him in weeks. He hadn't really expected to hear from Fett again, actually, until the cruiser's comms had gone off and Fett's rough voice had filled the bridge. Fett had ignored the other Mandalorians, Kreese and Koska and Woves, and had invited Din to Tatooine, claiming that he had something for Din to look at. I should have known he'd come back here, Din thought, weaving his way through the familiar sand-blasted streets of Mos Eisley. The crowds parted for him easily, shifting out of his way like minnows clearing the water for a Koloklaw fish. Mos Eisley was used to bounty hunters, even Mandalorian ones, and nobody paid Din much mind once they'd sized him up. He drew stares like he always did, but none that cut or caught on him. Tatooine had its own strange kind of gravity, especially for people like Fett. Din had felt the pull of it too from time to time. He'd first come to the planet as a newly minted warrior of his tribe, stubborn and proud and eager to win Clink and glory to bring back to the covert. But he still remembered those first few nights out in the Great Dune Sea, the cold of the desert and the clarity of the stars.
Maybe we should try and build Mandalore here, Din thought, imagining Kreese's reaction to the suggestion. He smiled grimly under his helmet. He hadn't been able to goad Kreese into punching him yet, but he'd find her limits eventually. Just have to get her away from Reeves and Woves.
The other Mandalorians, Koska and Ax-Woves, a steady, morose sort of man who had been happy to trade a few spars with Din despite Din's medical restriction and had rejoined their little band in the days after Gideon's defeat, very rarely let Kreese out of their sight and never let Kreese and Din spend any time in a room alone together. Din had the vague suspicion that their behavior was more for Din's protection than Kreese's, but thinking about it for too long made Din's Beskar tight and heavy, his breath short, so he tried not to think about it at all. He'd left all three behind, anyway, and wouldn't have to think about them at all until his business on Tatooine was done. Speaking of business, Din hadn't exactly been surprised to hear that Fett had gone back to Tatooine, but there was a difference between coming back to Tatooine to find work, there was always, always bounty hunter work on Tatooine, and coming back to take over a slice of the Hutt cartel. From what Din could see, it didn't look like the Hutts had tried to take the planet back yet. Jabba the Hutt's palace loomed whole and ominous in the distance, set far enough away from Mos Eisley that it shimmered in and out of view in the ever-present desert haze. Every twist of the wind shifted the palace's shape, domes and spires wavering in the sun. A trickle of speeders and transports moved between the city and the palace. Should be easy to get out there, then. Despite the change in leadership, Mos Eisley was just as rowdy as it always was. Music spilled out of cantina doors, and Jawas worked the crowds. The rich scent of spiced bantha meat hung in the air, strong enough that Din could smell it even through his helmet. His mouth watered. The light cruiser had been stocked with nothing but Imperial rations. Din hadn't had anything as good as Chuba stew since before Tython. He'd made Tingilar and Ooj cake in the crest-spattered kitchen on the trip over, laughing when the kid got his first noseful of the Tingilar's spices. "I can eat at the palace," Din told himself, wrenching his thoughts away from memories of the kid before his chest could start to hurt. He repeated the words his teachers had pounded into his head. "Focus, Mandalorian." If Fett didn't have anything to eat, Mos Pelga would. Tatooinians had almost as good a tolerance for spice as Mandalorians. Din stopped in a grimy cantina long enough to rent a speeder, conscious of the eyes on his Beskar, on his spear, and hit the desert road, following the snaking line of speeder dust towards the looming palace. The speeder moved fast enough to whisk away Tatooine's oppressive heat and Din's increasingly circular thoughts, its engines growling as they echoed off the ridges and rocks. The palace reared up ahead of Din within a few minutes, enormous and squat and ugly, though the usual battalion of Gamorrean guards was gone. Din didn't know how Fett had cracked the Hutt's palace, but however he'd done it without wrecking the place. The doors, as Din pulled up and left the rented speeder under the watchful eye of a shaggy-faced Bothan, were solid and set well on their hinges. The palace walls were scored with carbon marks and dents, but none looked particularly fresh, and most of the holes in the wall had been repaired with fresh plaster and left to cure under the sun. The Bothan made no move to stop Din or even check his weapons, only grunting as Din parked the speeder and tapping away at a datapad. Din ignored the Bothan and moved on, picking his way around other speeders toward the palace's great doors. "I'm here to see Fett," Din told the guard at the door. This one was human, dark-skinned and clean-shaven, a gnarled scar twisting the left side of his mouth. A pulse rifle was strapped to his back, but in his hands he carried a short, solid-looking wooden club. Traditional, Din thought. The human looked Din up and down. "You Mando?" he said. Din raised his eyebrows underneath his helmet. "Is Fett getting a lot of Mandalorian visitors?" "Yes," he said. The human nodded. "Boss is waiting," he said. "Throne room. Up the stairs, take a right. Down the stairs, you're there." He made no move to check Din for weapons, nor did he say anything about the Beskar spear or the blaster on Din's hip. Jabba had made a show of checking all his guests, but if Fett was worried about assassination, his people certainly weren't. "Thanks," said Din. He'd been to the throne room. He'd done a few jobs for Jabba back in the day, though he'd quit coming out this way once the covert had moved to the other side of the rim, but it had been years, and the palace had changed hands a few times since then. Din couldn't remember who'd taken the throne after Jabba had died. Some Twi'lek, he thought, but he'd never paid enough attention to politics to care. The human let Din pass through the doors and into the cool, dark palace. Maybe not as dark as I remember, Din thought. In Jabba's day, the palace had been close and dank and filthy. The only lights had been Bantha Fat lanterns and sunlight through grimy windows. The halls had been filled with Gamorreans and slaves and slimy, oozing sycophants, all of them caught in Jabba's orbit like flies in a web or planets in a black hole's gravity, trapped with little hope of escape. Jabba had paid well and had always had work for a bounty hunter, but Din had hated coming here. When the covert had moved a few more parsecs over, while outside Tatooine's orbit, he'd been a little relieved. Tatooine had been too far to make a regular trip, and Din had been able to justify cutting ties with the Hutts, even if he liked the rest of the planet well enough. Under Fett, though, the halls were different. The stinking Bantha Fat lanterns had been replaced by softly glowing light cells. The Gamorreans were gone. The odd droid or two still moved from room to room, laden with cleaning supplies, but Din didn't see any slaves, either. The hall had been swept recently, and the air smelled faintly of incense or spice. Someone had even cleaned the windows, letting sunlight spill in across the sandstone floors. Din kept his pace even, unhurried. He could hear music drifting up from the throne room, and he hesitated at the top of the steps, oddly nervous. Why did Fett call for me? He wondered. He hadn't asked himself that question when Fett's transmission had come through, desperate to get off the light cruiser and away from Bo-Katan Kryze and her machinations. But now that he was here, about to step into Boba Fett's throne room, it struck him that maybe Din should have asked. "He's my ally," Din told himself, trying to shake off his sudden prickle of apprehension. Fett had helped Din find the kid. He'd kept his word, even when Din had considered the score between them settled. Fett had even stuck around while Din had recovered from his bout with a dark trooper. Fett hadn't said much in his message, just that he'd had something for Din to look at, but he probably just had a job. He'd been Beroya, too. He probably just wanted Din's help for a hunt. Focus, Din thought again, shaking his head a little. The motion did nothing to clear the dull ache that had lurked behind Din's eyes since he'd woken up in Bacta. He gritted his teeth and pushed his tension aside, struggling to bring his singing nerves back under control. 20 years a hunter, he thought, a little bitterly, and it's only now that I'm slipping. Din made his way down the stairs, hands curled tight. He didn't reach for the spear or the blaster or even the darksaber, but he thought about it. Fett is my ally, he told himself. My ally. He's not trying to trap me. But I'll steer clear of the Rancor pit just in case. The throne room was also different than Din remembered. He reached the last step and paused, surprised. What had once been a hot, fetid room full of bodies and chains and garish trophies had been cleared out almost entirely. Gone were the stands where musicians had played, the platforms where slaves had danced, the animal heads bolted to the walls. Fett had kept the bar and a small band of Rodians played strange-looking pipes in one corner, but the rest of the throne room had been converted into a cavernous open space, all of it viewable from the throne. Jabba's lounge was gone too, his couch and his pillows and the little mud wallow he'd sometimes rolled in while taking visitors. The throne Fett had replaced all that with was simple. It stood up on a dais to give Fett the best view of the room and was made of solid, dark wood, carved with runes. Fett himself was sprawled in the throne lazily, his Beskar still painted green, one leg cocked off the edge of the throne. Fennec stood at Fett's back, her hip cocked against the chair, a pulse rifle strapped to her shoulders. She saw Din first. She nudged Fett's shoulder and raised a hand, offering Din a smile that flashed like a vibroblade. Din inclined his helmet. Silence fell over the room. Fett didn't keep a packed audience like Jabba had, or he hadn't had the chance to build up quite as much business. There were a few handfuls of people scattered here and there, a knot of Weequay pirates by the bar, a blue-skinned Twi'lek serving drinks, a Blackford Wookiee grumbling to a droid, some humans who wore Tatooine-style loose tunics and were eyeing a pair of Tuskens mistrustfully. The Wookiee's a hunter, Din thought, cataloging the room and its inhabitants, the familiar process settling his nerves. The Weequay'll be smugglers. The humans are locals, probably. And the Tuskens. Fett knows how to use that Gaderfi of his. I should have guessed he'd have a friend or two among the Tuskra. Mando, Fett called, his voice deepened by his vocoder.
You made good time. We weren't expecting you for another few rotations.
Din stopped just before the throne, at the edge of the Rancor's grate, tilted his head and shrugged.
I wasn't too far out when your message came through, he said. I took a shuttle off Narshada.
Fett whistled. Narshada? What were you doing there?
Din shrugged again.
Passing through, he said. His nerves twitched, unsteady. He frowned at himself underneath his helmet. Don't lose it, he thought.
Fett waved a hand, and the Twi'lek serving drinks behind the bar came over, her movements long and graceful. She wasn't a slave, that much Din could tell. She had no chains on, and she was wearing actual clothes instead of the rags Jabba had forced his slaves into. And she cast Din an appraising look underneath her eyelashes. Her skin was a pale, fine shade of blue. Her leku were banded with intricate tattoos, a spiral of geometric shapes locked together.
Din didn't move.
A drink for my friend here, said Fett.
I'm fine.
You sure? Fett said, cocking his head.
Not even Tihar?
Din blinked.
Where'd you get Tihar?
Based on Kreese's virulent dislike of Fett, Din still didn't really understand that either, the way Kreese seemed to hate him. He was surprised that the other Mandalorians would trade with Fett, but his heart lifted a little. If Fett had Tihar, he might know where to find other Mandalorians.
Mandalorians like me, Din thought, though he felt a stab of guilt as soon as he thought it.
His covert wouldn't take Din back, not after he'd removed his helmet. Din wasn't a Mandalorian anymore. But Kreese and her kind were strange and confusing, and Fett even more so. Din missed the solidity of his own tribe. He missed knowing where his place in the galaxy was.
Fett huffed, sounding amused.
I made it, Mando. Old family recipe. Well, sort of. Had to make this batch with Mesa instead of Siddiq, since nothing else grows on this dust bowl. It'll put the shine on your helmet.
Din hadn't had Tihar in years. His covert hadn't ever had enough fresh fruit to distill it, and their allure had looked down on imbibing anyways. Still, his mouth watered.
Before Din had been his covert's hunter, the older warriors had brought some back for the younger ones a few times. It had felt like a great secret, sneaking drinks while their allure had been hosting another covert's leader, laughing as the playfights between warriors grew sloppier and sloppier. Din pushed those memories aside, too.
I'm fine. Din repeated, with some effort.
He couldn't afford to get drunk here in Jabba's old palace, in Fett's kingdom, at least not without knowing what Fett wanted, if he could be trusted or not.
Not that I've been the best judge of that lately.
If you're sure, Fett hummed and waved the Twi'lek off. He tilted his head and Fennec leaned down. Din's auditory sensors were good, but not good enough. The noise of the throne room had tentatively picked back up again, and Fett spoke quietly.
Din waited.
After a moment, Fennec slid off the throne and padded towards the bar, graceful as a vine tiger. Din looked at Fett, confused.
I've got business, Fett said, tone apologetic underneath his vocoder's modulation.
Like I said, we didn't expect you for a few rotations yet. But Shandle'll see you fed and watered if you're hungry, and then you and I can get to our business.
We have business? Din asked, trying to parse Fett's words out.
He relaxed a fraction. If he and Fett had business, Fett wouldn't try to kill him, at least not until their business had come closer to a conclusion. Besides, Fett was Mandalorian. Stabbing Din in the back while hunting together wouldn't be his way.
Fett laughed.
Din's confused frown deepened. He wasn't sure what was funny, but Fett only nodded, the red stripes on his helmet bright and freshly painted, and waved Din off in Fennec's direction.
Sure, he said. We've got business.
Din nodded too, satisfied, and uncurled his hands.
Business was good. Business would give Din something to think about other than Kreese and the Darksaber and Moff Gideon, then the Dark Troopers and their inexorable strength, then those doors closing on the Jedi and the kid. Business would give Din something to do.
He made his way over to the bar, taking note of the sentience he passed. The Wookiee was definitely a hunter. Din gave him a wide berth. The humans had finally left off glaring at the Tuskens, who were having an entirely silent conversation with their hands about water rights, and the Twi'lek was nodding along as Fennec outlined something for her. When Din finally made it to the bar, Fennec cocked her head at him and smiled. You look better, she said. Din grunted. The last time Fennec had seen him, Din had been fresh out of Bacta, half-concussed and incredibly confused by the whole experience. It would be hard to look much worse. How's the head?
Attached, Din said shortly. That was about all that could be said for it. Din's Beskar had held up against the Dark Trooper, as it had done its best to punch him through the walls of the light cruiser, but Din's head hadn't held up against the Beskar. Din's ears still hadn't stopped ringing. On the light cruiser, the med droid had been giving Din regular injections of Bacta to help with the swelling and the pain, but Din hated how strange he felt afterwards, off balance and cut to pieces by the slightest shaft of light, so he tried to avoid them when he could. He'd very purposefully left the cruiser before the droid could find him and force another round of injections on him. Fennec made a sympathetic sound.
I hate Bacta, she said. Everything tastes blue afterwards.
You hungry? We can set you up in one of the conference rooms. Water?
Din hesitated.
I am hungry, he admitted. He was relieved by Fennec's offer to let him eat in private. She'd seen his face already. By creed, Din wasn't supposed to have put his helmet back on. But the visor filtered out the worst of the light, blocked the smells that made him sick to his stomach, and muffled the noises that made black spots flash in front of his eyes. And the helmet hid how confused he was, how out of his depth he felt. He'd put it back on after the Bacta, and he'd only taken it off in front of Kreese twice, both times quick and furtive, more for show than anything. Fennec smirked.
Our cook's Tusken, she said. You up for some spice?
Din brightened at that.
I lived with Tuskens for a while, he said. Most other sentients didn't care for Tusken food, but it wasn't that bad, really. A little heavy on Womp Rat for Din's usual preference, but there wasn't much else to eat out in the Dune Sea.
You'll fit right in, then. Fennec rolled her eyes and came up off her elbows, nodding at the Twi'lek before beckoning for Din to follow her.
Which tribe did you live with?
Din named the tribe with his hands, White Bantha, first putting his right hand to his chest and drawing it away, pulling his fingers together, then cupping each side of his forehead with his palms before turning his hands away in a fist to mimic a Bantha's horns. If Fennec didn't understand, she didn't show it. Tusken words didn't translate well into Basic, and if Fett had lived with Tuskens for a time, he would have told her that. Someone out in the desert had to have healed Fennec up anyways. Tuskens didn't have Bacta, but they were more than capable of rigging up prosthetics when they had to.
How long did you live with them? Fennec asked, curiously.
Din shrugged.
A while, he said. Tracking the passage of years on Tatooine was difficult. Din had lived among the White Bantha for more than one standard year, but less than two. It had been a strange time, though Din had learned a lot.
Fennec huffed.
You're worse than Boba, she said, but she said it without any bite. She led Din to a small, neatly kept room just off the main throne room. Whatever the room had been used for in Jabba's day, it was just a simple meeting space now, stocked with a sturdy table, a few chairs, and a cabinet full of bottles in one corner. To Din's surprise, there was already food waiting for him. An enormous plate of Tusken curry, a platter of Jaipur bread, a bowl of dried tamor, and even a glass of water.
Fennec smiled.
Nora's got a comm directly into the kitchen, she explained.
Nora must have been the Twi'lek at the bar.
And the kitchen's got the whole place rigged out. They can get food just about anywhere, faster than you can draw that blaster.
Din eyed the unassuming little room again, a bit more suspiciously now.
Relax, Fennec said, gesturing at the table. I'll keep watch. Enjoy. Ushib's curry is hotter than the sun's. She skirted Din and slipped back out into the hall, where she closed the door behind her. Din waited for a few moments, tense and frozen, before he heard the unmistakable, if faint, sound of a body leaning back against the door.
She'll keep watch, he thought, a little dazed.
Mostly, he was touched. Fennec wouldn't let anyone come in while he ate. He'd still have to worry about someone popping up through whatever system of pulleys and tubes the kitchens had, but surely that system couldn't be very large. And it didn't matter if anyone saw his face anyway. The eyes of a servant in Fett's palace were the same as the eyes of an enemy under the creed. Din was safe.
You can eat, he told himself, curling his fingers around the edges of his helmet.
Fennec will keep watch, and she's my ally. I have business with Boba Fett. It'll be fine. He struggled with himself for a moment, paranoia clawing at his ribs, but hunger won out. He released the seals on his helmet before he could let his instincts win and tugged the helmet up, the Beskar digging into his fingers.
The warm, inviting smell of the Tuscan curry, made of spiced stewed bantha meat, nearly knocked him over. Din was at the table, grabbing a piece of flat Jaipur bread and inhaling curry before he fully realized what was happening, his helmet abandoned and teetering precariously on the table's edge. Din paused long enough to rescue the helmet. Din had dishonored his people, but that didn't mean he needed to dishonor the Beskar itself, then resumed bolting down as much curry as he could stomach. It was spicy, the heat warming and clarifying at the same time. It wasn't Tingilar. Nothing but Tingilar was exactly the right kind of spicy to measure up, but it was close. Din managed about half the plate, sopping up stray bits of sauce with Jaipur bread and cutting some of the spice with bites of tamur before he managed to slow down enough to drink some water. He hadn't been eating well on the light cruiser. Between the lights and the noise and the sickening sterile smell of the whole ship, what parts weren't charred and blaster burned anyway, even forcing down tasteless Imperial rations had been nearly insurmountable. Once, Din's self-control had been unshakable. He'd been able to make himself do or not do anything he'd needed to. "I've gone soft," Din thought, shamed. Breaking the creed had broken Din, like Durasteel that had been allowed to gather rust. Beskar never shattered, but Durasteel could, and Din wasn't made of Beskar. He pushed the thought away as hard as he could, though the shame lingered like it always did. There was nothing to be done for it now. An action done could not be undone. New actions could be taken, but nothing Din could ever do could fix a broken creed. There was no atonement. This is the way. The Tuscan curry sat hot and heavy in Din's belly like a molten stone. His mouth and his chest were full of ash. He pushed the plate away. His helmet stared at him from the end of the table, smooth and unblemished. Din had scrubbed all of the carbon burns out, had wiped his blood from the inside of the helmet until his fingers ached. It looked as new as it had the day it had been forged. The helmet was as inscrutable as always. The visor gleamed. Din swallowed, wiped his mouth, smoothed down the stray edges of his beard, and tugged the helmet back on roughly. His allure didn't burst from the shadows and crack his head open, so Din figured he'd be safe to wear the helmet for another day. "Tomorrow," he told himself. "Tomorrow I'll take it off for good." He'd told himself that every day since Gideon's defeat. He hadn't managed to keep his word yet. Another failure. Before Din could get too twisted up in his thoughts, there was a soft knock at the door and Fennec's voice floated through it. "Mando," she said. "Finished?" "Come in," Din said gruffly. The seal re-engaged, closing Din off from the world, and he tugged his gloves back on. "So?" Fennec said, opening the door. She saw Din's half-eaten plate and smiled. "What do you think, hot enough for you?" Din made a rough, noncommittal noise. He got up to follow Fennec, ready to face whatever business Fett had for him. "I'll tell Ushu that you weren't impressed." Instead of leading Din back to the throne room, Fennec took him the other way, down the hall and past more doors that opened up into similar meeting rooms. Most of them were empty. Most of the palace was empty, in fact. There were a few sentients lounging here and there, lurking in the shadows, or enjoying the late afternoon Tatooine sun. But for such a large place, there was shockingly few people actually in it. "Where is everyone?" Din finally asked, as Fennec led him deeper and deeper into the palace. "What do you mean?" Din took a second to order his thoughts, reaching for careful words. He didn't want to offend Fennec or Fett by accident. "Last time I was here," he began, "it was very loud, packed, its own little city." "That was back in Jabba's day," Fennec said. She rounded a corner and Din followed, tracking their route through the palace. "He died right around the time the Empire fell. I wasn't in this part of the galaxy then, but I heard about it. I guess the whole hemisphere nearly tore itself apart, filling the vacuum. Somehow, Bib Fortuna. You ever meet him? Pale Twi'lek, always hanging off Jabba's every word." Din grunted. He had met Bib Fortuna, if the Twi'lek he was thinking of was the right one. "Somehow he ended up in Jabba's chair," Fennec continued. "Ran the whole operation nearly into the ground. There's no one here because there haven't been any credits to be made here in years." "Why do you and Fett come in and take over, then?" Din asked curiously. Fennec only shrugged. "I get bored easily," she said. "And Boba's pretty sure he can turn Fortuna's operation back around.
He can hardly make it worse, at least.
Din supposed that was fair. He didn't know Fett very well, but Fett's help in saving the kid had been invaluable. Din wouldn't have found Gideon's cruiser, wouldn't have found the kid, without Fett.
Here, Fennec said, gesturing down a hallway, which ended in a sturdy-looking door. Bobo will be in there.
Thank you, Din said, nodding at her.
Fennec smiled.
I'll tell Ushib to turn up the heat if you're sticking around a few days, she said.
She left him at the end of the hall. Din eyed the door.
Fett will have work, he told himself.
At this point, Din would be happy to muck out a Rancor's cage if it meant time away from the light cruiser and its occupants and their expectations. Mind decided, he swiped a hand over the door lock, which beeped once and let the door slide open.
Fett was standing, bent over a hollow table, his dented green helmet perched on the edge. He looked up when the door opened. When he caught sight of Din, he didn't smile exactly, but his expression lightened. His armor had picked up a few more scratches since Din had seen it last. His gauntlets had been raked by something with claws, the green paint peeled away to reveal shining Beskar, and there was a carbon burn inches from Fett's heart.
Mando, he greeted. Fennec take care of you?
She introduced me to Ushib's cooking, Din said.
Fett hummed.
Ushib's tribe found me, he explained. They got me back on my feet after... He ran a hand over his scarred head.
Din understood.
Took care of Fennec, too.
Din nodded. The Sand People, in his experience, were hard and brutal and capable of a viciousness unmatched in the galaxy. But their hospitality, too, was unmatched, if one managed to earn it. Din didn't know what exactly Fett had done to win the care of a Tusken tribe, but based on his own experiences, whatever Fett had done had been impressive.
You called me here, Din said, pulling his thoughts out of the desert sands.
What do you need?
Ah. Fett flicked off the display on the holotable, a long string of numbers and letters that made no sense to Din, and grabbed his helmet, buffing it with one arm before fixing it back on his head.
Yeah, been digging around down here when I can. Found something you might be interested in. Come here, follow me.
You found something.
Din hadn't expected that, but he was curious now. Curious enough to follow Fett through another door, this one leading into a curved, tunnel-like hallway. There were no windows, and the darkness made Din's nerves tighten, his hand reaching for his blaster.
Careful in here, said Fett. It's a tight fit. Don't know how the old worm managed it.
Where are we going?
Din picked his way into the tunnel after Fett, doing his best to ignore his prickling neck.
Jabba was worse than a crate dragon when it came to hoarding things, Fett explained.
Once they were properly in the tunnel, Din could see several other tunnels branching off every 6 or 7 feet. The depths of the palace reminded Din of the Mudhorn's nest on Arvala 7. His fingers twitched, aching for a weapon.
He kept all kinds of shiny bits down here. Fortuna? Did Fennec tell you about Fortuna?
Had no idea about it all, otherwise he'd have spent it on imported fruit and Twi'lek whores.
I don't have much interest in treasure, Din said.
You'll be interested in this, Fett said.
As they went, Din's curiosity grew, edging out his gnawing anxiety. The tunnels he could see led to wide, high rooms, and the things held in those rooms were strange and varied. One room held piles and piles of fine Myrialan silk, another held nothing but small golden orbs. A third was full of tanks of clear greenish fluid, alien shapes floating lifelessly in the gloom, and a fourth was packed with skeletons in every shape and size. Their empty eyes raised all the hair on the back of Din's neck, made him glad he'd come down here armed.
So did Fett, he thought.
Fett was bristling with weapons. Blasters at his hips, the rocket launcher on his back, a set of vibroblades Din could barely see tucked flush against his wrists, the hilt of an old-fashioned Verd knife jutting up out of one of his boots.
"Kree's try to kill you yet?" Fett asked, sharing the hall so Din could match his pace.
Din snorted.
"No," he said. "Koska won't let her."
"Not the little one?"
Compared to Fett, who was built like a Gundark even if he wasn't especially tall, most people were little.
Din smiled to himself.
"Yes," he said. "She's..." I didn't recognize the word she used to describe herself, but she's Kreese's second, her right hand. Sworn to guard Kreese's honor or something.
Koska had given Din a word in Mandalorian. Talvad, but it hadn't been one of the handfuls of words Din recognized. He hadn't had much time in the Fighting Corps to learn Mandalorian, and his covert didn't use the language. A dead language from a dead planet, his teachers had always said. A language that could get us all killed. Din hadn't wanted to show Kafka just how little Mandalorian he actually knew, so he'd only nodded and stored the word away in his memory. Fett snorted. Sounds like a thankless job, if you ask me. Din hadn't, but Fett had a point. Din had never heard of an honor guard. His covert didn't keep them. A warrior's honor was their own, and only they could safeguard it for themselves. Reeves and Woes went about like they were responsible for Kreese's honor, not Kreese herself. We haven't cleared it out all the way yet, Fett said, stopping before Tonal's mouth. His broad body blocked Din from seeing what was inside. Huts live a long, carking time, and Jabba had this whole palace riddled with hideaways like these. But when I found all this, I thought I should give you a call. Fett stepped back. Din's thoughts stuttered to a halt. The room was full of Beskar. Piles and piles of it, gray and gleaming, arranged into stacks, piled as high as Din's chest. He'd never seen so much Beskar. All of it was melted down and packed into tidy ingots, stamped with the strange, spiky symbol of the Hutt cartel instead of the Empire's mark. Fett plucked an ingot off the stack and offered it to Din, who accepted it with numb fingers. He held it in his hand. The weight was right, the waves in the steel. He was no armorer, but he'd been highly ranked enough in his covert to watch the armorer work. He knew what Beskar looked like. Din tapped the ingot against his gauntlet anyway, just to hear the pure note of it rise into the air. The ingot sang and his armor echoed back. Beskar. Jabba had all this? Din asked hoarsely. There was enough Beskar here to armor his entire covert. 15-20 Camtonos at least. A planet's ransom. Yeah, said Fett. Don't know where I got it from, but it's been here a while. Knowing the old worm, he probably paid someone to snap up an Imperial shipment back during the days of the Purge. He did that from time to time when he wanted to make a point, and then something new would catch his eye and he'd go off after that instead. There's rooms and rooms just like this down here, though this is the only one I found with any Beskar. Din's grip on the Beskar ingot tightened. He swallowed. All of this had been sitting here for over a decade, untouched, unforged. Din's covert had spent years on the brink of starvation, living hand to mouth, even their best warriors forced to wear Durasteel, and all of this had been locked away down here to gather dust. Din made himself put down the ingot before he could get too angry. His fingers were trembling faintly. His jaw ached. You can't let Kreese know you have this, Din said, training his eyes on the space just behind Fett's head so that he wouldn't punch the man in the throat and make off down the hallway with as much Beskar as he could carry in his hands. Fett was reasonable. Din could work something out. He could hunt for Fett in exchange for a little Beskar at a time. It would take years to earn it all, but Din would do it. She will kill you, and Kafka won't hold her back. Fett snorted. I don't want it. He waved a careless hand. Take it with you. Give it to Kreese if you want. Drop it off with your own people. I don't care. Put it to good use. Din stared at him. It's yours, he said slowly. I've already got my Beskar gum. Fett's voice was firm. He wrapped his knuckles against his chest plate. His father's armor, Din remembered. The kark do I need all this for? You don't... What about your tribe? Din didn't understand. This much Beskar would let Fett build a true fighting band. With how fortified the palace was, Fett's tribe wouldn't even have to hide. They'd be able to live as they wanted, armored and strong. Fett laughed. I have no tribe, he said. Just me. I've had enough of brothers. Well, there's Fennec, I suppose, but she doesn't want any Beskar. Take it, Mandalore. It's yours. Din's mouth was dry. His heart pounded. What do you want in return? Din was sharing a quest with Bo-Katan Kreese. Kreese was Fett's enemy. Armoring an enemy was dangerous. Fett's gift wouldn't come cheaply, but Din didn't care.
Fett was silent. Mando, he finally said, slowly. It's a gift. I don't want anything.
No, Din said, slashing a hand through the air before he could stop himself. This is... You can't give this away! The debt!
Mando, Fett said. His expression was impossible to read, but his tone was heavy, concerned.
There is no debt.
There is! Din wanted to tear his helmet off and tug his hair in frustration. Fett had already seen his face. Din put the Beskar ingot down like it had burned him, afraid to dishonor it with his own shame.
I'll work for it. You have enemies. You have to have enemies. The Hutts, people, Bib Fortuna was paying off the Empire. I don't care. I'll hunt them for you in exchange for the Beskar.
Fett huffed. I don't need a hunter, he said.
Every syndicate needs a hunter, Din countered.
That was a fundamental truth of their part of the galaxy. Bounty hunters and assassins were essential. They were as integral to a criminal operation as bolts were to a ship. Who do you have hunting for you? That Wookiee?
Careful, Mandalorian, Fett said, though this time his tone was round with amusement.
Kha'Zix's a fierce fighter.
I can outfight him.
Din had no idea if that was true or not, but if he had to fight a Wookiee to earn all of this Beskar, he'd do it with his bare hands.
I believe you, Fett said. And he sounded so absolutely sincere that Din paused, confused again.
Fett sighed and rubbed the dent in his helmet.
I have enemies, he admitted. But you're not...
You're an ally. You don't have to earn anything. I'll give it to you. All of it.
This is not the way, said Din. He set his jaw, ready to argue further.
Beskar couldn't be given. Beskar was earned through blood and sweat and glory and pain.
Fett sighed again. If you're sure.
Yeah, I've got enemies.
I'll do it, Din said immediately. He didn't care if Fett wanted him to hunt down the ghost of the Emperor himself. A hunt was good. A hunt was work. It'd keep Din off the light cruiser and give him a way to honor the Beskar.
I can do it, Din told himself, curling his hands tightly.
Fett shook his head. When his voice came through the vocoder again, it was smooth.
All right, he said. He regarded Din from behind his visor, the plates just as unreadable and distant as Din's own.
Fine, Fett said. His tone sent a shiver down Din's spine.
Welcome to the outfit, Mandalorian.